Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts, gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit the upsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the podcast, we're talking about the latest from The Real Housewives of Miami and The Real Housewives of Orange County with Jolenta Greenberg, who hosts the podcast Hot Masterpiece Theater, which basically takes an iconic scene from reality TV history and examines it in hindsight. It's very clever, and I was fortunate enough to be a guest on an upcoming episode, so definitely check out her podcast because it is really great. Before I get to my chat with Jolenta, which went for almost an hour, the last episode of Gabbing with Gib, I broke down the entire Real Housewives of Orange County blogger situation up until that point, what everyone's been saying. And after I recorded, there were a few more updates that made a lot of headlines, and I'm feeling inclined to include them here since people did message me about them. So essentially, Teddy had Katie on Two Teas in a Pod. Tamara was not on that episode. She says that she was told that Gretchen and Sheena are very tight, which they are friends, and that Sheena was actually the one who told Kiki the rumor about Gretchen being hospitalized, or saying that she was hospitalized and that drugs were found in her system the day after Naked Wasted 15 years ago. Katie says, I have heard that from multiple people too. And Teddy says, so there are multiple sources who could have told Kiki. To me, this is a red herring. So Kiki goes on her Instagram story in response to this. She says, I woke up from a nap and I was going viral again. Too much to address and I'm headed out for the evening. But just know that this fresh batch of lies will be addressed soon. And then she said, John Cougar Mellencamp's daughter is spreading lies on her podcast about me and Sheena Shea. This is the weirdest fucking sentence I've ever written in my life. So pretty clear, she's denying. And Kiki also released a statement to Us Weekly after they reached out to her. And she said, I have my theories on why Teddy put this completely false and baseless rumor into the universe. But unlike Teddy, I don't say anything for attention and clicks. I hate that Sheena was needlessly dragged into this circus. She does not deserve this. Further, Sheena had Kiki on her podcast. At the end of the episode, they addressed it. Every episode of Sheena's podcast, they do a Jax hole. And she says, the Jax hole, I think we can agree, is the Two Teas in the Pod podcast for the lies they spread about us this week. Sheena called it a flat out lie. And she said, why would I do this? And then Kiki agreed. She said, nobody in the Bravo universe has heard this. This is the first time it's ever been put out there, and it's completely false. And Tamara knows the truth. I spoke with Tamara in New York City at Watch What Happens Live. She knows the whole truth. So she can easily tell Teddy, don't even put this out there because I know that this is false. And then Sheena said, and also, Tamara has editing control of her own podcast. So she would have had to have okayed this podcast to go out in the world knowing it's fucking false. So why are you to defame me and Kiki? This isn't okay. I'm not going to settle. If you try to take advantage of me and try to lie about me, I'm going to fight back. I'm not going to let people walk all over me anymore. And people need to start getting used to that. So there's that. I wanted to give you that update because that is a pretty big update on the situation. For what it's worth, I completely believe Kiki and Sheena. I think Gretchen telling Sheena and then Sheena telling Kiki and Kiki then lying to two journalists about it, about who gave her the information just to set Katie up randomly. That feels completely illogical and far-fetched to me. And I maintain what I said last episode, that Katie clamming up in her interview with Bryce Sander at ET when Kiki's name came up, saying she refused to talk about her, she doesn't want to talk about her anymore, she's getting her 15 minutes of fame, and then also bringing up the fact that she was just trying to support a woman of color in the media by you know, becoming friends with her. to me, that was a pivot. And to me, that was a tell that she's lying about telling Kiki. There are plenty of other journalists and podcasters and Instagram accounts that Katie was in contact with that are not women of color in the media. So she can't use that as her excuse for why she was giving information out to podcasters and journalists in general. I think that she's trying to pivot. And I don't think she's lying about the whole situation. I just think that she's lying about this specific instance, because now it is a case of she said, and people are more inclined to believe Katie because they're in her corner because she's being ganged up on. And she knows that. And she knows that people are not going to believe Kiki, who is also associated with Sheena, who is an easy person for the fandom to dump on. And it all makes sense. And I think that them putting this out there into the universe on two T's is just another sort of red herring distraction. And Teddy being like, oh, so there's multiple sources that could have told Kiki, implying there's maybe even more people that could have done it, but they're hearing that it's Sheena. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't make sense. And they know that Sheena is an easy person, again, for the fandom to believe could have done something like this, when in fact, it actually makes no sense for her to have done this. So that's my 2 cents on that. I'm going to be pretty clear about it as well. And I will probably also stop providing these really granular updates on the situation unless they continue on the show, or unless they continue to be interesting and not just like more of the same. But I'm guessing that we'll get less of this since the reunion is likely coming up, and they will hopefully want to save it for that. And as I said in this episode, I really hope that the reunion does its job in that it can really boil this situation down to the information and the updates and the sort of happenings that have happened outside of the show that really matter, and not because there's been a lot of noise, and I think a lot of this is just noise. So I really hope that they sort of zero in on what really matters in this situation and what is really pertinent to the conversation. Okay, so for now, enjoy my chat with Jolenta Greenberg, all about the latest episodes of The Real Housewives of Miami and The Real Housewives of Orange County. We talked a little bit about Next Gen and Real Housewives in general at the top of the conversation as well. Check out her podcast, Hot Masterpiece Theater, wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll see you later this week. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Jolenta Greenberg, who is the host of Hot Masterpiece Theater, which is a podcast that I was delighted to be on recently, where I broke down, with the help of Jolenta, the episode of Real Housewives of New York, where Aviva throws her leg. And that is coming out soon, so definitely look forward to that. But I had a great time, so I want to repay the favor. Thank you so much for coming on Gabbing with Gib today. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
We really did have a good time breaking out episode, didn't we?
It was a prolific episode. I cannot wait for everyone to hear it. So many insights were made.
And I'm not a big rewatcher of Housewives and Bravo in general, just because there's always just so much to keep up with currently.
Right.
So it really was, for me especially, just like really fun to actually take the time to like watch that episode one, but also just like remind myself of all the context around it and really like do the deep dive of, which was really kind of part of the, it was a transitional moment for Roni, but
yeah,
that general span of years was the golden era of Bravo in so many ways. Are you a big, obviously the theme of your podcast is looking back at big moments, but are you a big rewatcher in general? What's your sort of diet when it comes to that?
Not until now, not until making this show have I done like detailed rewatches. So most of the time I've been working off of memory until recently. Yeah.
Yeah, same. What's your Bravo origin story?
Well, it's really evil. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I used to watch Bravo for Cirque du Soleil and Inside the Actors Studio.
Stop. Okay, before
back
the
when
big
it was
rebrand.
Like a channel for the arts, and so I just rolled with it when I was like, great, Inside the Actors Studio and this documentary about these, you know, women who all live in Orange County. But then I was like, oh, this kind of reality TV is fantastic. I'm obsessed.
So you were OC season one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What's your historically your favorite one franchise?
Ooh, it's tough. I mean, I really like we were discussing earlier, the glory days of Roni, love Potomac. also. I feel like that one just like burst on the scene so beautifully. And then, gosh, I mean, Atlanta's also just so many like amazing one-liners came out of Atlanta. And we like didn't, we almost like didn't know what we were watching, like Lightning in a Bottle when that all came out. So yeah, I'd say those three for now.
I mean, that's the taste jumped out right there. Yes. I love those three. Those are three of my favorites.
They're all great.
They all, of course. And before we get into it, we're going to talk about obviously the, you know, what's going on OC, what's going on in Miami. But I'm curious from you, did you watch Next Gen NYC?
Yes. Yes, I did.
What did you think of that? Because I do feel like that's a show that I kind of think of as sort of representing potentially like a direction that Bravo can go in and sort of a new frontier for sort of a genre of show they can be doing. Yeah. What did you make of that first eight episode season?
I thought it was an interesting effort. Like I enjoyed like casting someone who has this huge social media presence already, which was fun. And like I really enjoyed the cast. I was also a huge fan of Gallery Girls back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
So I was sort of wondering, I'm like, is this just sort of like Gen Z Gallery Girls? Gallery Girls was like the millennial sort of little capsule show about like what it's like to be a millennial making it in the city. And this is like what it's like to be a Gen Z making it in the city. But I really think they've tried to set themselves up for something more recurring, which I think is like good on them. You know, if I'm going to be forced to watch some like Housewives children, like, honestly, I'm fine with you putting them all together at first to just sort of see how interesting they are, see what sticks. Like, I'm kind of okay with it.
And how interesting did you find them? Because I'm like, I think my reservation about the show, which I've talked about on this podcast before, is like individually, the people they chose to be on the show didn't seem that compelling or dynamic. But like, yeah. I was generally surprised at how dynamic they were.
Right. Like, you know, I did not expect to end up like loving Ariana Bierman.
Exactly.
I was like, oh, she's our amazing breakout star. Who knew? I thought it was hilarious how quiet Brooks was when he was sort of our like linchpin in the show of like, he's the bridge between these sort of Gen Zers making it in the city, like, nitty gritty style, and these Bravo specific Nepo babies. And he was supposed to be the bridge between them, but he was the one who's like, I don't want to get involved. Like, I'm not going to fight my own fight. And I'm like, why are we like, I liked the inner monologue thing, but like, that was a device to make use of the fact that he just wasn't talking
in the moment. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's like, I get it. It's cute. But also it's like, it is funny that he's supposed to be like the crux of this show when he like seemed to be the one wanting the least involvement.
It really was interesting. I think about, you know, obviously Ariana told us about, you know, Kim stealing her money and all that stuff. That was that was one of the more compelling reveals of the whole season. And I don't know if you saw, but Damon Dash, the father of Ava Dash, just filed for bankruptcy.
Admitted
to all this sort of like having a really precarious financial situation. And I was like, get those season two cameras up, baby.
Right. I start thinking.
Unfortunately,
things
that's where
like,
my mind
I
goes.
Hope cameras are rolling because we also saw her like complaining about her, you know, $10,000 a month apartment that she wasn't paying for. So,
yeah. And Ava's one of those people who like, I think, I liked that she was on it because she had this sort of cool girl like remove and she had brought some maybe legitimacy to the show in certain ways, but not.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
On others, but I'm like, you got to get to work. And so maybe this is, somebody's going to bring this up season two. So
yeah. I love that it did give us a way to have discussions about privilege that like we almost aren't allowed to have on The Housewives because you're not supposed to talk about the children. But like watching Georgia sort of get defensive when someone says she's privileged, and it's like, honey, losing a shit ton of money still means you're privileged. But like, she doesn't see it that way. And seeing how this younger generation does see privilege and like what they're owed and you know what they have to work for is just really interesting.
100%. Yeah, and the Riley Charlie thing throughout the season was also like super. Yeah, and that's something that you're right. Like if that was to potentially play out on Housewives, you just expect like a lot of them to just say the wrong thing or just to not handle that moment correctly.
Right.
But it felt sort of natural to be for that conversation to be had on Next Gen. All right. So let's get into, I want to start with Real Housewives of Miami because I think Miami, I just love it. Even when it maybe can become a little repetitive or sort of circular, I'm still so entertained and I'm still so like, I could watch these women for hours. This week's episode was where they went on the cruise and we had this sort of, this big lead up around sort of this reticence about Stephanie and sort of where she was sort of landing in the group right now. And, you know, her and Alexia are going at it and there's some weirdness about the jet of it all. And like, I'm like, I feel like for the past, like, three episodes, I'm like, I just don't want to hear about the private plane anymore. That's sort of one of my main takeaways of Miami right now. I'm good on the private plane talk around Stephanie. How are you feeling about her and that kind of through line?
Right. It's like not the fun kind of unrelatable anymore. Like at first it was like, oh my gosh, they're feuding about this. This is wild. But I'm like, okay, I get it. Like house rules, you have a plane. Like disrespect, but like also this is a wild thing to have as a problem. The like cashmere on your plane getting, you know, scuffed by Louboutins. You know? Like that's quite the problem to have.
Yeah, it's quite the problem to have. And I just like she is holding it over them and she has repeatedly held it over
and
them.
And like,
I just look at it as like how the whole thing has been handled and how she's discussed the whole thing. It's just so emblematic of why she hasn't had female friends up until now, you know?
Right. She sees it as like very transactional and like is fine pointing that out. And it's like, it's just getting old.
Yeah. And I was actually surprised in this episode. So one of the friends she does have is Anastasia of Anastasia Beverly Hills, which is like a really, really funny sort of 10th hour reveal on this season. Yeah. But in that conversation where she was telling about her drama, she did start talking about like, oh, like, should I freeze my eggs? And it was interesting because I feel like when we were introduced to Stephanie, and she can make whatever decision she wants about having kids or not having kids or whatever. But I felt like when she was presented to us in that, you know, third episode or whatever it was, she was like, no, like, I don't want to be a mom. Like, this is like my thing. I'm spending my money on myself and our travels and my things. And that's like, so it was interesting to sort of here, not an about face, but I thought that she was so dead set on not having children.
Right.
So that was an interesting reveal, you know?
Yeah, that was like her part of her brand. I'm like, part of her introduction is like, I'm Steph and I don't like kids because they make crumbs and Birkins and crumbs don't go together.
Yeah, that was
and I was like, I thought we were so on board with not having kids. We were like making sound bites. And now all of a sudden we're like, maybe I'll freeze my eggs.
It's like, maybe I want a second season, so maybe this could be right. Like a, I was that's like, kind of what it was giving
this,
to me.
This scene did read as like, I'm going to have someone influential come on and like help make me look good in a little one-off scene where she's like, oh, like you just have trouble communicating because you're like such a businesswoman. And like, oh, maybe you should freeze your eggs. Like, you know, never say never. And it's like, it's like, good job, Anastasia. Like, you did your job.
Yeah. And it's always funny when they have little moments like that on any Housewives show, because it's like, they're like, oh, here's the Instagram of them posing together for proof that they're actually friends. And it's like, okay, that's probably the one photo of them together that exists.
Here's the other time they've hung out, we swear.
Exactly. The other sort of interesting thing before the cruise of it all was there was this little scene of Lisa and Jody. And she was sort of, you know, being really kind of hammy and heavy handed about like, you know, I want to get married again, like got to put a ring on my finger. And they have this joint confessional where Jody sort of like overshares. And he's like, well, sometimes we have these blowout arguments where we actually sleep in separate beds. At least it was like, shut up.
Like, he's like, no, we're perfect.
Yeah. But it was just such a funny little like, it's a reminder like, oh, yeah, we do. There is a control over what we're actually sharing and there's always more going on and, you know, X, Y, Z. But I found that to be kind of an interesting little moment.
Yeah. Well, and I thought like in the scene that they are doing where she talks about how like, I like having a ring on my finger, like I like being a missus. I'm like, he looks terrified in this scene and just sort of frozen. And I'm like, I can't tell if he's terrified of like marriage talk or also just terrified because he like forgot what she wanted him to say and like doesn't know his lines.
Yeah, it was kind of giving deer in headlights. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And it's funny because I feel like I've gone through sort of different feelings about my impressions of Jody, you know?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah,
I think at first, I think one of the reads on him was like, oh, is he just doing this for clout? Like he's dating a real housewife. Like this is Miami and she's in the headlines and he's like this sort of tech entrepreneur. Like it was kind of unclear.
Right.
And I think sometimes my impression of that is like, oh, they're in it sort of for the wrong reason. I do feel like he's like a sweeter guy and like kind of more docile guy than I ever kind of realized until maybe this year. So I think it is kind of clear that he's not actually that comfortable in front of the cameras. And I kind of believe that from him, you know?
Yeah. And like, you know, I also understand his hesitation with stuff where it's like, I wouldn't want to like give too much away while like the person I'm dating is like going through her ex, like terrorizing her legally and stuff. Like, I'd be nervous too.
Yeah, definitely. I also, it's like, he made a good point where he was like, you know, I knew that I was getting into this situation with a lot of drama involving her ex and like it was going to be kind of a thing. And I knew what I was signing up for in that regard. But that has more or less like, you know, it's dwindling down in terms of the drama from the Lenny side of things. But there's still the same level of probably bitching behind the scenes and chat, you know, between them at their apartment where it's like, but now it's about Larsa and now it's about.
Right. I would say now on to the next fight.
Yeah. And like, I wonder if part of him's like, oh, so this is just what it's always going to be this level, but just sort of the person
the focus
that we're
is
talking about is changing.
Yeah.
And that's a big revelation to have.
Right. That's a realization when you're in a relationship, let alone a relationship with Lisa.
Yeah, I know. And I love Lisa to death, but like there's a lot that comes with that situation.
Oh yeah.
And being with a Real Housewife in general, I think that we actually saw that with the Todd and Alexia of it all. It's like,
oh yeah.
Todd didn't want Todd was in it sort of for the clout. But he didn't want the drama that came with the clout.
Right. And
he
didn't know
the
clout.
Control.
Yeah, and the clout came with a microscope that, like you said, you can't control.
Mm-hmm. So they go on this cruise. And it's funny because I feel like in the lead up, it was always like, all right, Marisol called in the favor to Richard Dick Branson, as she likes to call. She makes a lot of dick jokes, which is very just like on brand for Marisol. I mean, that's pull right there from her. It's like, Stephanie, you think you have the private jet and blah, 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 blah. I'm just going to have Richard Branson on speed dial to get me this big ass suite on a cruise. And we're going to be on there for a couple nights. And it's kind of like a...
It was quite the flex.
Yeah, it's like quite the flex. But I kind of like this idea that it's going to be on a cruise for two nights. It's kind of just like an extra trip to end the season, it seems like.
And yeah, and they're like, it leaves from Miami and goes to Miami. We just on a, does it leave at all? I think it does. It just goes kind of out for a minute.
It goes out and they all get seasick, apparently. They were all clearly feeling ill this whole time. Like, it was like they were all
Gertie
like,
at one point was green. Like, oh, I felt so bad for them. Yeah.
And they're like forced to have like a sushi dinner. And they're like,
yeah, halfway through the scene, all of a sudden you see they have the wristbands on for motion sickness.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that. Well, the whole time I was like, they need them right now. And then I was like, oh, it looks like Gertie's wearing some. And like, I think Stephanie
I'm
was.
Dying. That is so funny. I also love this little thing that Adriana's turning 50, I believe, and she's having a big birthday. And I was basically like, oh, Adriana's the Mariah Carey of Real Housewives of Miami, where she doesn't celebrate her birthday or recognize time. And I just was kind of dying at that whole little scene.
It was kind of tragic. Oh, you know, she's according to, I just Googled it, she's 59.
Oh, so she's turning 60.
Yeah. It's like,
wow.
Also,
okay, she looks great. She looks fantastic.
Looks I know that's patronizing to say, but no, like,
of course.
Her looks fantastic. We were like a decade 50. Off, and I was like totally on board.
Thank you for fact checking it. Thank you for fact checking that. It was also like hearing her say that she was exchanged for younger models twice was like really.
That was tough. That, and I'm that like, that's heavy. How she sees her story is like she was just traded in for something completely out of her control. And like, that is, I'm sure, like a big part of it.
Completely. And I think it also gets into this idea where, like, you know, there's a big conversation on this show since it was rebooted about who's full time and who's friend of. And I feel like we get these little vignettes into Adriana and Kiki and Marisol's lives. Like, we got that scene with Kiki and her father on this episode, which I like that we're following that thread with Kiki.
Yeah, yeah.
But with Adriana, it's like we know about her past and we see her, you know, have these like random boyfriends come in for random events here and there, like at the beginning of the season when she was making out with that guy.
Oh,
yeah.
I was like, we see her just graphically making out with whoever she's with.
Right. But it's like, I would love to be able to hear a little bit more about, like, other than a 10-second confessional from her about being exchanged twice for quote unquote a younger model. Like, I wish we could go deeper on that again with her, because
that was just a little dip into like her actual inner life.
Totally. And that's something that I feel like you don't hear it, that talked about a lot on Housewives, like sort of the, you know, the women get divorced and the ex gets a younger wife. And we heard about it with Lenny and Lisa, I guess, which was like, Lisa's like still like only like 39 or something crazy. Like she's young.
I know.
But it's like, I don't know, somebody who's about to turn 60 and hearing about that I would have liked to go deeper on that, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I feel like we just touched the surface. And I was like, oh, no, there's a lot going on. I know she clearly wants attention for being sad right now, but also, like, she's dealing with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason she's always, like, throwing these men in everyone's face and, like, the camera's face. And it's
absolutely.
Like, oh, she's really out to prove something.
Absolutely. And I think it probably plays into also now that I'm thinking about it, like, the way that she carries herself in the group, you know, and just sort of, like, the different ways in which, I don't know, it's that it feels very core to Adriana now that we hear her talk about it.
Right.
So we have these two separate dinners on the cruise ship. And, again, they're all feeling sick. But I feel like these dinners were sort of like the women drudging up things that we haven't talked about for a couple weeks, and we're like back on it. Like Larsa is still upset that Lisa is accusing her of setting Marcus up with the Coke paparazzi photos, which was something that we heard about like seven episodes
of
at this
season.
Point. Yeah, yeah, like a very long time ago. I think that's she has every right to be upset about that. And we didn't really explore that accusation. Like, I remember when that was said in that sit down between Larsa and Lisa, you know, again, early in the season, I was like, wait a second. Like, we hadn't heard about that yet. And I want to know where that came from. Is there proof that Larsa called the paparazzi on Marcus? Like, how do they know this?
Yeah. Where did that come from? That was very specific and out of the blue.
Exactly. And like, it is, you think about it and you're like, is Marcus Jordan somebody who's being followed by the paparazzi in like the south of France or wherever he was? Like, probably not. But that doesn't mean that Larsa necessarily called them. But I need to know more about this accusation.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do as well. And like, it did get sort of forgotten in the fray of just like, unfollow him.
Exactly. When it comes to the Lisa and Larsa thing, more generally, more kind of overarching, where are you landing when it comes to their issues?
I mean, I see both sides. I like, obviously, when I break up with someone, I'm like, everyone that's on my team has to cut ties. Like, I'm petty. So like, I understand that. But I also understand, because I'm petty, having a knee-jerk reaction to being just told what to do, or like having something like automatically expected of me. And I'd be like, no, now I'm just not doing it because you told me to. So like, I get both sides, but ultimately it's like, just it looks a little clout chasey that you won't unfollow like a certain someone's ex because he comes from a super famous family.
Mm-hmm. And what do you make of Jody? I guess he revealed in this episode that Larsa is actually one that initiated their texting relationship, but not in this specific instance. I think kind of like more generally speaking, she did.
Right, right.
Them texting recently.
I feel like it's a little unnecessary.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's just like, what are we doing, you guys? Like, and part of me is like, is this just for like storyline? Are we actually this upset about it? I feel like she probably is that upset about it, considering how bought into the relationship she was. Like, just it being a breakup sucks. And like, I also understand being mad at like the people who you were couple friends with, like the guy, you know, if he still is like, well, it doesn't mean that I broke up with him. Like, that would piss me off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Irrationally,
I totally
maybe.
See all that.
Like, yeah,
definitely. But then we have Larsa at dinner in Spain and she's like, stop talking about your divorce. You're ruining the vibes. Like, it's like she's so
I feel like they are so hard on her.
They are. They
are. It's like, guys, when you're going through that shitty of a divorce with that wild of a person, like, it's going to be all consuming and it's just going to be a downer. And like, if the person's going to be around, expect to hear about it.
Exactly. And also, like, as like she hadn't talked about Lenny that much at all this whole season. And then I'm sorry, it blew up when they were on the trip together, but it was something was blowing up and she had to deal
right.
with it.
And it's like, I've had to deal with needing a notary in last second. It's fucking stressful. And it is all you're talking about for, you know, a couple hours. And it's like, they are so hard on her. Yeah, her timing is ridiculous. And she like makes things even more complicated often. But like, you can't just be like, never talk about the main thing happening in your life if you want to like talk to her about her life. Right? I don't know.
Exactly, exactly. And then trying to like take her phone away from her and just like it's like you're not her mom, first of
right,
all.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, she did like get in trouble, like get sent to like the principal's office.
But I almost wonder if that's like an ingrained dynamic in this group almost. Like, Lisa, I'm pretty sure, was 29 when she joined the show. She was one of the youngest housewives, I think, ever, honestly. And
I think Lenny picked her up real young, where it's like, I think she's been sort of infantilized her whole life.
Definitely. I think that I'm happy she's trying to break out of that. But I also think that I'm guessing the last decade that she's known these women, plus, you know, that's sort of been some of the dynamics sometimes. Like when Lisa's going through it, we sort of mother her, you know? And
right,
like, so
right, totally.
For her to be sort of reprimanded as a daughter in some ways isn't surprising to me, but also let her break out of that. Like, let her have her independence, basically, because that's what she,
right.
I don't know. It's, now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, oh, Lisa is sort of the daughter of the group in so many ways.
She definitely is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little monkey.
Mm-hmm.
Experience a membership that backs what you're building with American Express Business Platinum. Get 2x membership rewards points per dollar on eligible purchases in key business categories, as well as on each eligible purchase of $5,000 or more, on up to $2 million in eligible purchases per calendar year. American Express Business Platinum. There's nothing like it. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-platinum.
Stephanie and Alexia's issues. You know, Stephanie's like, I'm going to be like the chill Stephanie. Like, I'm going to be like, she was calling it, I forget what she was calling it, but it was like,
I was going to say Mariner Steph, but that's
Mariner
not.
Mariner Steph. It's one of the, it's like nautical
Maritime,
Steph.
Maritime, nautical Steph.
Nautical
that's
Steph.
That's what it is, nautical Steph.
And I was just like, it's just
yeah,
so
nautical
like, I'm
Steph
be
is
so chill.
Chill.
I'm going to be so chill. And then Alexia is at the other dinner and she's like, she's a problem and she has to, somebody has to stop her.
Yes. Yeah. Like the way she addresses all people needs to change.
Which, like, it's just
her delivery is rough.
Oh, it is really rough. It is really rough. And it's, I think that Stephanie and Alexia are like, they're kind of a good match, I think, for each other.
Yeah,
like they, and I can totally see how somebody like Stephanie can get under Alexia's skin. And who she, you know, I have issues with Stephanie, but I also appreciate how she's come in just kind of guns a blazing and really not scared of having conflict and speaking her mind. Like, I appreciate that about her as a housewife. But if you're Alexia, it's like, well, I'm the queen bee around here,
right.
First of all.
Why is this little girl coming in to rock my boat?
Yeah. Like, what was she, you know, she used the dog metaphor earlier this season. I forget who was which kind of breed.
It was like a Chihuahua.
The Rottweiler.
Yeah.
Which is pretty accurate. And then if you're Stephanie, it's like, wait, who does this girl think she is? Like, I'm queen bee of what?
Like I'm
not bowing down to anybody.
I don't ascribe
basically
to the rules of your universe. Like,
right, I'm the one with the private jet.
Longer. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think it's a good, it's a compelling dynamic moving forward. And I don't see them, let's say they get past this current squabble they're having, I don't see them staying in a good place for very long in the future. I feel like
Yes, I would agree with you there.
They're going to be one of those that like maybe gets good for a little bit, but it's going to mostly be, I think, contentious between them.
Yeah. And I think Stephanie, at least on the surface, sort of bills herself as like no bullshit, where like Alexia's like kind of all bullshit sometimes. Like in a beautiful housewife way.
In a beautiful housewife way. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of smoke around the reality of Stephanie's financial situation.
Ooh, yeah.
That's kind of been playing out online and stuff. And I think I'm guessing Alexia will make sure that's addressed on either the reunion or the subsequent season.
That will be coming up, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. There was another really funny little interesting detail that kind of played out before we get this Marisol Stephanie sit down, where they're back in one of their rooms and Alexia, Marisol, and Julia are FaceTiming Larsa, who's drunk in bed.
Oh, right.
They were not at the same dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she like did all these shots. And Larsa, I feel like people talk about her selling feet pics on OnlyFans all the time, but she doesn't really talk about her OnlyFans anymore.
No. Yeah.
But we have this kind of like, I think, authentic reveal from her. She's like, wait, I have to post a photo on OnlyFans to pay the bills right now. And like, I haven't had sex in so long and I miss having sex 3 times a night. Like, that was an unfiltered drunk Larsa that we don't normally get from her. She was pretty loose, it seemed, in terms of how she was talking.
Yeah. Cause she's so like a Kardashian poised, like only, you know, exposing certain things. And she's like, oh shit, I got to post. I need to pay my bills.
Totally. And I was like,
and I'm horny.
Because I was also wondering for a while. I was like, wait, is she even still active on OnlyFans? Because that was sort of her thing when the reboot still came along.
Like, deal with it. She does OnlyFans.
Exactly. And then we haven't really heard about it from her mouth in a while. So she's clearly still active on there and making money there. So that's,
it is still paying the bills.
Good for her. Then the last part about Miami is this Marisol Stephanie sit down where, you know, it's the morning after and we're gearing up for some workout class. And, you know, Stephanie is trying to say that like she'll go from 0 to 100 and she doesn't really know what she's saying when she does that. So that's sort of her excuse for, you know, getting lit up in the way that she does with Alexia. But and then Marisol's like, wait a second. So we're just like not going to be responsible for the words that come out of our mouth.
We're just
like,
I love that for Marisol. When I'm fired up, I can't. Yeah. And Marisol's like, oh, cool. So we're just not responsible for what we say.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that Marisol actually, I really liked her in this scene with Stephanie because she was really, she was kind of reminding Stephanie like whose territory this was. You know what I mean? Like she was like,
right.
No, like that's not how this is not. You're
there are no safe places here. I believe she said at one point, or like no safe spaces.
Yeah, it's like this is how this works. Like you might not want to play by the rules all the time, or you might not want to like, you know, abide by the sort of implied hierarchy of this group, essentially. But like you're not going to get away with it that easily.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought that it was interesting, though. So Stephanie apologizes.
Yeah.
And Marisol's like, well, I have a list of things that she mentioned this list. I don't really know exactly what she's talking about. But Marisol is the one, or one of them, who had such an issue with Lisa taking notes about Larsa in real time on the trip. And I'm like, huh. So Lisa can't have her notes, which I thought that Lisa taking the notes was a little bit overboard.
It's a bit much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're going to have such an issue with it, you're also allowed to have
a list. Yeah.
Right. Which I thought was an interesting little hypocrisy.
I did not. Yeah.
She told her
I clocked that she had a list, but I'm like, oh, I did not put two and two together. You are so smart. But
and
yeah,
there we go.
It's like, girl.
They end this with, you know, Marisol goes, we're having a new start for Mighty Mouse, which is her. She has nicknames to everybody.
Yeah, and her Stephanie nickname.
Yeah, Stephanie's Mighty Mouse, Lisa's Monkey. But then we have this sort of flash forward. It's like 24 hours later or something. And it's, you know, Stephanie saying Marisol is a jealous demon who disguises herself as a very loyal friend. And then she also
wrote that down because it was like such a good line.
It's a great line. And then she has another great line, which on the surface is great, but it also is kind of paraphrasing another housewife that we all know and love to hate, which is, when you come for me, you better hit a bullseye, because when it's my turn, I don't miss. Mm-hmm. And obviously that reminded me of Bethany saying, when you take a shot at this bee, you better not miss. That it was, you know, we're referencing the ancient texts there a little bit.
Yes,
with that one.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. But clearly, I think as we maybe were alluding to with Alexia and Stephanie, Stephanie and Marisol, they're not going to last.
No. It is that relationship has a short shelf life within hours, apparently.
Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the end of this episode of Miami. And I interviewed Stephanie maybe a month ago, and she said that she was on good terms with everybody except for one person.
Okay.
I'm maybe assuming that it's Marisol now.
That would be my guess now.
Not Alexia.
She's like saying some intense things. Yeah. I would have assumed Alexia until the other night.
So I think there's only like two episodes left of Miami, I want to say.
Right.
So there's,
I was going to say, we'll find out soon.
Yeah, it's gonna end badly with them, clearly.
Oof, yeah.
But that's Miami, and I'm just, again, they're just delivering. It's comedy. I think it's masterpiece theater.
It really is. Well, and like, is the main friction between them that like Marisol says, like, basically she initiated the like, let's just not go, or like, I'm not gonna go, you can, why don't you stay with me?
Yeah, I think, yeah, Marisol took ownership of that. She was like, I didn't want to go, it wasn't Alexia. And I feel like that sort of triggered Stephanie, not just because it was like, why would you not want to fly on my private jet, but also it sort of activated her not being accepted by other women.
Yeah
You know, insecurity. And that's sort of what it was, right?
Totally.
And like, these are the cool girls, the group that she thought she was in good with. And actually, they can just decide overnight that they don't want to hang
they're
out with
lecturing
you.
People how to behave on your jet. And then overnight, like you said, they're just like, actually, we're not going on the jet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we move on to Orange County, I just want to get your read. It wasn't really touched on in this episode, but obviously one of the biggest conflicts of this season has been the Gertie and Julia situation. Where are you sort of with that right now? Because I think a lot of it has sort of also played out online, and like, it's really been built up by a lot of fans, and it feels like an icing out of Gertie in some ways. So people are sort of, I think that makes people, you know, sympathize with her even more. Where have you sort of as a viewer landed with this?
I mean, I'm pretty firmly on Team Gertie. I just find it very bizarre that like her words and like reactions are just seem to be like policed by the other women so much more than Julia's, that it's bothering me. And like, also, I think I over-identify with Gertie. Not that I've gone through cancer, but I went through going through chemo for lupus, and like, it, like, you like go through it. You're on steroids. It really can mess with your moods. And so just like, I feel for her being reprimanded for like having big feelings when sometimes other people might think they're not warranted, where it's just like, just like, cut her a little more slack. She's still recovering. Like, let's let her have her feelings. And also, let's not police, like, you know, a person of color on like their reactions in general.
For sure. For sure. And I think another sort of sub dynamic in there has been the Kiki factor, which is like, I think a lot of people feel like Kiki wasn't like a true friend to Gertie, or didn't defend her correctly. And, you know, there was that one moment where she asks her to be less extra. I do feel like Kiki has always had good intentions in her friendship with Gertie. Right. And I understand why, like, there's a strong reaction to Kiki maybe not being like completely 100% behind Gertie. But like, I feel like she's been sort of placed with this like traitor label. And I don't really feel like she deserves that personally.
Right. And I think also, like, I'm sure in the moment, she's also looked to as the person to sort of like mend the situation. So I think she's in a really tough situation where like expectations are put on her from viewers, expectations are put on her from her friends in the moment. And like I agree with you. I think she's just trying to like keep everything chill and like keep everyone getting along. Mm-hmm. And then in the process, that might look like letting someone down.
Yeah, totally. Especially when that person's on an island and you don't want to completely abandon. It's hard. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. So OC.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Talk about like an icing out that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
For real.
It's interesting because I feel like some people for this season think it's like a great, like so great. And like, it's really, you know, it's been a really good season, and who cares if it's all about blogger drama, because it is good drama regardless of what they're actually talking about. And then on the other side of things, a lot of people are saying it's being completely weighed down by this blogger talk. Like, well, why are we talking about different Instagram account podcasters like so much so that we're bringing one of them on the show to like state their case? Overarching, how do you feel about how much the show has relied on that this season? And is it affecting how you're watching it, or does it not bother you?
I guess it's not bothering me too much because, like,
okay,
in my mind, the reality of their situation is they are all kind of trying to use the press or like bloggers to like self-produce and like sort of like get storylines rolling. I think that's sort of my read on it. And I'm like, I think it's just the reality of their situation is there is this much involvement. So like, we kind of have to acknowledge it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. And I still have been doing the show,
I still
honestly
think it's, I was going to say, it gets a little annoying sometimes when it's like super self-producey, but like, it's just what's happening.
Yeah. And I think the season's issue is that there have just been like one too many instances of it. And also that the central one involves Kiki Monique, who they eventually brought onto the show to explain some of the stuff.
Right.
And there's also these two other credible journalists who are also involved in this game of telephone, who I don't think we're going to hear from on the show, and they're not renaming them. And so there are these missing links of like that would help to explain probably like how this information got out there, or did it get altered in the repetition between one of the links of this chain of people. And so it's sort of like now we're having to guess, like, okay, maybe Katie did repeat it to Kiki, who repeated it to this journalist, who maybe interpreted it this way, who repeated it to another journalist, and then repeated it to Tamara. It's like, that's where my head starts to hurt.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's like, how many layers, are there? How many degrees of separation? It is a tough game of telephone to keep track of.
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, it's obviously not going to land, as it never really does when it feels like they're trying to ice somebody out. I think one, in this situation, it feels like punching down at Katie, because Katie is still the newest member
she's
of the
group.
She's
a freshman sophomore.
She's still clearly on easy ground. Like, she still is like clearly, I think the evidence of her talking to all these different Instagram accounts and podcasters and stuff, to me, hints that like she thought this is what you're supposed to do, and she got in way over her head and did it too much. And so she's still figuring out how this works. And I think she should have some grace period in that. But also, like, you can argue that grace period should be up, you know, by the end of your second season.
Yeah.
And then also she's the only woman of color on this cast. And so it's all these women against her. And that's equally not going to land well. And it's not going to come across well for the rest of the group. And yeah, it's just that adds to the feeling, I think, around this season. It's like, it's a little bit of an icky feeling.
Yeah, it feels gross watching, you know, what feels like a setup to like take down, you know, like the weakest link to begin with.
Exactly.
And it's like the audience is always going to identify with like the underdog or with the person like getting beat up on. Usually they're not identifying with the angry mob. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we have Katie sit down with Jen after the scene that didn't land the most was the results of the lie detector.
Oh my gosh.
And then she leaves the house. And it sort of felt like at the end of that last episode, like, oh, Katie's not going to be on the rest of the season.
Like,
it was
that's a wrap on Katie. Yeah.
But then we have this day after scene where she goes to coffee with Jen, and Jen is like, Jen is ice cold to her. She is not having it. Yeah, that was tough energy coming from Jen towards Katie. And Katie comes in with this big envelope, and Jen's like, "Ha ha! Did you bring receipts?" And she's like, "Actually, I did."
Yeah.
And Jen's like,
"Yeah."
And from Jen's perspective, she's like, "Oh God! Like
this
we're
is
still
exactly what she would do." Like,
yeah, exactly.
Typical. Yeah.
And Katie's receipts are that this guy is basically like a hired actor, and he's
from the
like,
guy's own website.
Yeah, exactly. She has printouts from the website. She later said in the podcast that she found that her daughter recognized the lie detector guy from like a Logan Paul show or something like that, which was like, it just tells you everything.
I recognized him from Vanderpump, where like everyone didn't believe him and was like, Vanderpump hired him to like justify her BS, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like lie detectors. It's just like, they prove nothing. It's a gimmicky thing. I get that it's a little camp, but like in this situation, it doesn't work for me. Katie's valid in questioning the legitimacy of this guy. And like, it's also like other women were caught in quote unquote lies, but hers are the ones that were, okay, she unanimously failed.
She failed everyone. And like, we are 100% taking it at face value. But like, what about Heather failing the paparazzi thing?
Question.
We're just never going to bring that up. Or like, it was wrong with that one. Like,
mm-hmm. Or Tamara and the autism thing.
Yeah,
or
we're just selectively like agreeing with this test.
And Gretchen's thing about not going to the hospital, or not saying she went to the hospital. But apparently Tamara and Shannon actually did call her out in the scene. They just didn't show it on the show.
Right, yeah. I heard that later on a podcast. Yeah.
But again, it's you just have to question. You have to question everything,
right?
Know?
Yeah, it's like what is happening, and it's like based on what I've heard on social media from the guy's website, like it sounds like they didn't do like an extensive version of that test. It sounds like they did the sort of like for show gimmicky version.
Yeah, and then we had Emily and Gina saying, you know, we have a plan, and this is going to be a pivotal day for our group, and
like, we've got her. Don't worry.
It all felt like preordained. Exactly. And I'm curious what your read on, though, of Jen. Jen and Katie were best friends in this group for a season and a half. And she is essentially abandoning Katie in this moment at their coffee. She's you're on your own, girl. What is your read on like why Jen is really kind of being a stick in the mud there and turning her back on Katie?
My read is cynical. But I kind of agree with what Katie's been saying, which is like, I think Jen is so glad that she and Ryan aren't under the microscope and like so willing to just go along with someone else who like has issues with Tamara, that she's willing to kind of drop this issue in a way that Katie isn't. And she's saying like, ultimately, I pick like the heat not being on me and like hating on Tamara in a different way over our friendship.
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah,
that just kind of seems like what it is, where she decided like I didn't hear it.
Yep, she decided she didn't hear it. And it's this thing also where I think that in this whole situation, it feels like some people want to ascribe like, okay, this person's lying about everything, this person's telling the truth about everything. When in reality, I think there's a lot more nuance to what's happening here. And like, I completely believe that Gretchen said this at this dinner probably multiple times, right?
Yeah.
And I believe that Katie heard it, and I believe that Katie repeated it to Kiki Monique. And I believe Katie's lying and Gretchen's lying and Jen's lying. And it's just this mess of like this house of cards that was never gonna. I almost think that Slade and Gretchen brought it up at that dinner even if it wasn't true, even if Gretchen didn't actually go to the hospital, which I'm thinking maybe didn't happen, because they wouldn't be backtracking on it if there was no proof of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I
think
you know, like there's no toxicology report that they can actually print out and provide.
Right.
But I think that they brought it up to try to, ahead of the season, get Jen and Katie completely on the Tamara train, to get really Katie on the Tamara hate train. Right. Like that's
sort of
what they did. Right.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it was this pre-planned thing. And again, it's like, I understand they have, all these shows have alliances and plans and things like that. But for it to be that sort of, let's meet before the season and have this be what it's going to be, like, it just, it's never going to go according to plan either.
Right, yeah. And like, it seems very clear that it like wasn't going according to Slade's plan. Hence, like, why he, you know, contacted Katie's husband, Matt, a billion times.
Mm-hmm. And I love that Matt provided those receipts.
Yeah, I love that Matt's just like, oh, here's receipts. Like, yeah, we talked for 43 minutes. Like,
here's the call log. Exactly. And like, so, you know, I'm really glad that Katie has Matt. He seems like a genuinely good guy. He seems like he's telling the truth to me. But I also was dying at him being like, yeah, Slade keeps on talking about how he started the show. And
oh, yeah. Oh, I love it. And honestly, I believe it.
I love it. Beyond.
Yeah.
And then we have Joe De La Rosa, who's like on Instagram, like being like, no, actually, like I started the show. Thank you. Like,
So, and I love that we're, of course, always getting Joe involved.
But like Tamara bringing Joe around for a second time, not being messy, according to her. But I'm like, first of all, not to be too shady, but Joe's like bringing nothing at these events. Like she's going to say, and we don't see her say like anything essentially the whole time.
She's a non-entity there. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I don't really need her on the show. Like if she doesn't have two opportunities to be at big group events and really not light a match, like what's the point?
If the biggest thing that comes from her being there is Gretchen later saying like, and why'd you bring Joe again? Like it's not the fireworks.
No.
We thought it would be.
At the end of the episode, there's this big event that Jen throws on the beach with the mini croissant party favors.
The croissant in the little box. That was so sad.
At first I was like, oh, cute. It's like one of those croissant candle things. It's like.
Right. Or like a little trinket box or whatever. No.
No, it's literally just like a mini croissant from like a croissant. Plastic bag from Kroger. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, Jen. But we had the makeup between Tamara and Gretchen. They finally have a sit down where it's like, all right, can we move forward? Can we agree to move past this? Of course. Another one of those things that's not going to last, obviously. We saw the mid-season trailer at the end of the episode. They get into another fight.
Yeah.
It is not going to last. But I admire the effort, maybe, but it still just felt inauthentic, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like the skipping back from the little makeup.
We went from like listing shit that happened almost 20 years ago to skipping and hugging real quick. But okay, sure.
I feel like I will take it if it means that we're not going to bring up what happened 15 years ago anymore.
Right. If like, we're not going to talk about.
Yeah. Like, it's like, I'm okay if Tamara and Gretchen don't, if this doesn't last, but it kind of breaks apart based on something that happens within this season. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
Tamara
says something out of pocket or Gretchen says something out of pocket. Like that's what it should be based on. It shouldn't be
based on deadbeat dad allegations. Again.
Exactly. No, like it needs to be fresh. And that's actually what Matt Janella did this big podcast interview and I listened to it. And he said that when Slade called him during the New Orleans trip, he said he had Alex Baskin, the producer of the show, on the other line. And he was apparently Alex Baskin was like pissed off that like this was becoming a storyline on the show because it was based on something so far away in the past. And so that's my biggest hope about, honestly, in general, when they bring on somebody like Gretchen or Alexis Bellino, or on Atlanta, they're bringing on Cynthia and like other people as friends.
Right.
If you bring back the old Housewives as friends, it's fine if the re-entry point is based on their past drama, but the new season can't be defined by the old drama. It has to be fresh.
Right. Because then we're just watching, old fights that should be taking place at like Cut Fitness or something.
Literally, yeah. And I think that Alexis's drama last season with Shannon was obviously based on new stuff because she was with John Jansen, right? So that felt like it was at least new.
Right. It was fresh beef.
Yeah, it was fresh beef, but she wouldn't move. They couldn't move forward at all. Like, there was no opportunity for them to get past it. And that's why she didn't work. And like with Gretchen, it's a mistake to have the drama be based in the past, but at least Gretchen is being like, all right, I will at least pretend to try to.
I was gonna say, we're at least like going through the motions of forgiving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Was there any other sort of takeaway from this episode? Those are my two main things that I kind of wanted to touch down on because I feel like they're emblematic of what's happening right now. But was there anything else from this episode that piqued your interest?
Oh, one thing that just sort of stuck out to me was I really feel for Emily and her struggle and what she's going through. I also feel like, not to be judgy, because I've never been in her situation, but sort of coupling her child's issue with like also like we're on the brink of divorce.
Yeah.
Like that's a rough one. Like I don't know. Growing up, I had a friend who's like, my mom moved out because my little brother gives her a headache. And it's like, she got knocked up by someone at work.
Ah!
But like they freaking blamed it on the little brother. And like, I'm sure he's fucked up because of that. And it's like,
and this is on TV.
And it's like, and I was going to say, and this, like, I remember that. And that was just like school gossip from a friend. This is her saying it on TV where it's like, that does last forever. And I think she's saying just like, our marriage can't handle the stress of like, our marriage is in a precarious position and can't handle added stress. But the way it's being framed is like, this is directly contributing to my marriage problems. And I'm like, ooh, girl, you're not going to like how this comes across when it airs.
Reel it back in. Reel it back in.
Yeah.
Totally. Because I agree. That situation with her son is, I think it's in some ways good that she's talking about it on TV because it feels kind of new. And in terms of things to talk about on Housewives, and like, I'm sure it's something that people deal with.
Right. And it's real. It's, you know, must be.
It's almost like to show that she's not like using him for her son for a storyline. She's like, oh, but it's actually a bigger thing because it's infecting my marriage. But it actually makes it feel more like she's using
right.
it for a storyline.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Where it's like, it feels less like a storyline when you're just like, we're going through the evaluation process and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. Like, you know. Like
exactly. Brittany
has approached it in a way that I think has been really educational and like helpful for the community. And it's like, we gotta be like, once we're accidentally become an ambassador for this type of situation, you do have to be like a little more cognizant of how you're speaking about it.
Yeah. And the other reveal actually from this episode, because in my mind, I always, you know, it's Gina and Emily together.
Oh, yeah.
Is the revelation that Gina's ex had a heart attack. And
oh, yeah, that was wild.
I was like, whoa, this came out of nowhere. And it happened sort of right when she was coming back from the New Orleans trip. And I actually found that scene really affecting when she was with her ex's new wife
right.
and like getting emotional about, you know, I didn't have to have this conversation with my kids, basically.
Yeah,
like,
you,
I told them
like,
that their dad
you
died.
Taking him to the hospital saved him. And like,
yeah, I thought that was a really actually special scene that we saw play out.
And
yeah.
it's really nice to see her saying, like, just to see someone having worked through something so messy and now being like, I'm so grateful that I have like two other people to parent with and to like go through like their these kids' lives with them. And it's like,
it's a really cool rebrand.
And it's just so nice to see just as an example that it's like, oh, you can get there if you are going through like a difficult split or like a blending of family that's like not going well.
Absolutely. I guess, like, lastly, about to finish it out, the season of Real Housewives of Orange County, it's, again, the blogger drama is really kind of taking up all the air in the room, I would say.
Yeah.
But a person that we haven't mentioned at all, which is maybe telling, is Heather. And Heather is, like, this figure on OC that I really like Heather, and I think that she's, like, kind of essential for the show in a lot of ways. But I find that there are some episodes where it's, like, I'm not sure, like, where you fall here sometimes. Like, it's in some ways she's untouchable, but in some ways she's above the drama, but in other ways it's sort of like, maybe you need to get your hands a little dirtier.
Yeah.
Where are you with
her? I feel like similarly, where I'm like, you help make it, and like, you know, she's one of the only people who we see with their families and stuff still a lot, and it's, but also, you know, I think she probably has had like one foot out for a while, like trying to get on another franchise.
Is she trying to get on Beverly Hills, do you think?
I think she tried to. I think it didn't
work.
Now she's like, I'm moving back. Fine. Like, it's not happening.
That's funny. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. She probably did already try and it was shot down. It's like you're...
So now she's back. And I think she, like, I don't think she likes when she's involved in the storylines, which does make it hard to, like, seem super relevant because, you know, whenever anything's about her, she gets really defensive and like she has to look perfect. So it's like, where do you go with that? You do sort of become like untouchable or just like not fun to like disagree with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this season of OC, it's kind of a head scratcher a little bit, but I am enjoying it. I'm
curious to see like what goes down next, because like in the mid-season trailer, it does seem like we talk about like Heather is afraid of Tamra maybe or something. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why she's also laying low.
Yeah, like, that's true. That's true. And I think that a lot is happening around this show offline, the actual show. And that's where the reunion, I think there's too much happening off the show, but that's where the reunion should really do its job in terms of, all right, give us all the necessary information that like the casual viewer should actually know versus what's actually just noise, and bring it all together. And it could produce an amazing reunion, like a really kind of fireworks filled reunion, or it could just be too in the mud. Like it could kind of go either way, I think.
Yeah. It could really like sort of tie everything together and help us like get a handle on it, or just be more of stuck in the same like camps and rut of like, nope, like our actual problem was just Katie lied about everything.
Yeah. And for the sake of the show, let's hope it's the former. Let's hope it's the former way that it is. Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about the Housewives. When and where can people listen to your podcast, follow you, do all the plugs before we sign off?
Yeah, you can find Hot Masterpiece Theater wherever you listen to podcasts. We've got episodes up now. They're super fun. On Instagram, at Hot Masterpiece Pod. We post all our visual aids for the show. And my episode with Gibson will be up in probably like a couple, like 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, thanks so much for doing this. And I'm glad that we're now connected. And
we've
each other's podcast. So fun.
Yeah.
I'll have to have you back on some point in the future. But have a good rest of your week. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.